19 minutes past seven on Friday night's Arena. Physician and author Daniel Mason has published three novels, including the award-winning The Winter Soldier from 2018, a book that told the experiences of a young medical student during World War I. The intersection of history and science is once again to the fore in Mason's new short story collection, A Registry of My Passage from the Earth. But as well as that intersection, art and science, and how they play off each other, is a very important theme within several of the nine stories in the book. I'm delighted to have Daniel Mason join me this evening. Physician is such a wonderfully old word, but is it psychiatry that is actually the particular area of speciality for you, Daniel, as in your medical life?
That's right. Yeah. So I'm a clinical psychiatrist. I work at a university hospital at Stanford here in California. Trained in general medicine, but then we specialize afterwards. And I've been practicing this, I guess, for about 10 years now.
But within your professional life, within that professional medical life, arts and the expression of and artistic expression are a vital part of what you do within your clinical practice.
Right, and increasingly so. So my appointments divided up between clinical work, working in the hospital with medical students and trainees, and then also teaching a pair of classes at the university for undergraduates, specifically on the intersection of the humanities and psychiatry. So one course in, for example, the different manifestations and expressions of psychosis in literary texts across time, which has both a literary purpose and to teach the students how to look at these texts and appreciate the text, but also a clinical one as well to help teach those who may one day become doctors to better understand experiences that are so different from our own.
You know, this whole division of science and art, it's an old, hoary debate. In fact, it's been going on for a long, long time, I think. Given that you are a psychiatrist and you are an author, you must find the idea that the two things are totally separate quite hard to fathom, given that they both exist quite happily within you.
Well, they exist within me. I think that they struggle with each other at times because, like you mentioned, I think that there's increasing interdisciplinary divisions that has occurred with increasing specialization. I've found, I think one thing that's been exciting as life has gone on is to find the different ways that the two different fields end up informing each other. So whether it's reading an old case report because I'm interested in a patient and coming across a story in an old case report that then inspires a short story or a novel. So, for example, in this collection, there's a short story about a doctor who has seizures that turn him into a sort of a better version of himself. That's actually based on a real case report that was written in the 19th century. Doesn't occur quite the way I have it in my fictionalized version, but there's inspiration in medical texts everywhere. There's also this wonderful poetry of medical language, which I love exploring. But then the other way too, I found is increasingly rich in how I find that what I'm reading or what I'm teaching ends up then informing my clinical practice, and that can be anywhere from looking at works of art showing visions of melancholy and studying body posture and teaching that body posture to students, to reading old accounts that people have written about their own experiences, or even just thinking about a clinical encounter in the context of a story that's being told and almost sort of entering the room and imagining it the way that I might imagine it as a writer, thinking, what's this patient's backstory? What are the tensions in their life? Who are the people? How have they brought them to be the person that they are today? I think that all of that comes from reading literature.
And I'll come to the specifics of the title story a little bit later, A Registry of My Passage Upon the Earth. But that word registry, very much a clinical word, a medical word in lots of ways. I'm wondering what register you were in when you came to write the opening story in the book, The Death of about the death of the pugilist, or the famous battle of Jacob Burke and Blind Man McGraw. That's actually the title, Death of the Pugilist, or the famous battle of Jacob Burke and Blind Man McGraw. I found this story fascinating, I have to say. Are they real people? Is this from a case report you found somewhere, or an historical document you found somewhere, or are they totally fictional?
So it's a mix. There's a couple of real real historical characters. The hero, the protagonist, Irishman Jacob Burke, who is a bare knuckle fighter in Regency era England, he's invented. But the fights that between these men, you know, for the most part, lower class men, working class men, being brought together in these large, hastily constructed arenas, usually illegally so, on the outskirts of the cities, you know, and engaging in these intensely bloody battles of dozens of rounds. That was true, and also for the story, what was true, and I think the reason that inspired me to write it is I had come across some images of these men, and this had led me then to reading some of the old boxing accounts, and I encountered this exquisite English that was on one hand both my language, but also totally unfamiliar to me, just a vocabulary, a cant, a rhyming slang that was sort of spoken by people once that I could recognize, but not quite. And it felt like almost like, you know, I wonder if it's what a musician feels like when they stumble across like an old instrument that they can kind of figure out how to play, but it's something that's totally different. And so it was working in that register, like you mentioned, that was so much fun in writing this story.
In fact, it struck me that across the 9 stories of the book, you shift register almost from story to story. It's as if each story has a particular language that it needs to have for it to be told. I mean, I'm thinking in particular in this one, and you'll have to correct my pronunciation, the miraculous discovery of, is he Sam Ethicus the first? Do we leave out the P at the top?
I think it's Semeticus the first.
Semeticus, right.
You know, old Egyptian pharaoh is not around to correct our pronunciation, so I think okay.
We'll go with Semeticus then, you and I. Again, a fascinating character, and what he wanted to find out about language and the origins of language. Give us a sense of who, again, I'm presuming an historical character, but perhaps an invention of yours?
No, so this was a historical character who ended up surprising me in the way he appeared in history and other places, actually sort of reaffirmed the story as I was writing it. He's an Egyptian pharaoh, sort of famous because he's mentioned in Herodotus for this experiment in which he wanted to find out what the oldest language in the world was, sort of the proto-language of mankind. Mm. And so he decided that he wasn't just going to take anyone's advice for it, but he was going to carry out an experiment. And so as the story goes, he takes 2 children, babies newly born, and then gives them to a goat herd to raise among his goats, with the idea that they're not going to hear any sort of human speech and so be prejudiced to speak a particular language. And then they grow up and eventually they speak their first word, and the word is Bekos. And he gets this translated and it turns out to be the language Phrygian, and so therefore declares that he understands that the oldest language in the world is Phrygian. And you know, of course, this is just a sort of ridiculous story. But at the same time, in thinking about him, the one I was drawn to him because, you know, as a psychiatrist, I hear about behavioral studies all the time, some of which are, you know, I wouldn't say as bad as Semeticus's study, but getting there.
Yeah.
And so it was a chance to sort of look at that kind of science. But also it had me wonder, like, how fascinating that this ancient pharaoh has this kind of intellectual curiosity that would lead him to do this. And so the story is a riff on that. It's sort of exploring the other experiments that Semeticus carried out.
And the linguistic register that you use here is a sort of a biblical feel to it, certainly to my reading.
Yeah, so it's based on a 19th century English translation of Herodotus, which so you have sort of the translation, the original Greek kind of mixed in a way, right? There's this, it has, I think, this the repetition of the and, which is sort of King Jamesian biblical in origin.
I come then to the title story of the collection, A Registry of My Passage Upon the Earth. And this struck me, well, when you choose one of the stories to give to the title of the collection, it seems to say that story says something to you, the author, about the overall themes that you're discovering or that you're exploring here. Am I right in thinking that? And what does it say to you?
Yeah, no, I think you're very, very much right in thinking that. So this was actually the first story that I wrote. So before I realized probably around the third or fourth story that this was going to be a collection all about people in as different places as possible, all going through a similar kind of crisis or sort of or epiphany. But this was before that, and what had happened, I was working on my second book which was set in Brazil at the time, and I had come across in this very dusty little town this image of this painting of this photograph of this man in this extraordinary coat of his own creation, who actually kind of reminded me of a patient that I had had back in San Francisco, a man who used to adorn himself with traffic signs. And I asked who he was, and the local villager said that he was the most famous person from their town. And when I looked into it further, I learned that he had spent most of his life at an insane asylum outside Rio de Janeiro. His name's Arthur Bispo. I encourage any listener to immediately go and Google image his work, because then as I began to learn about him, I discovered this extraordinary artist who, despite the incredible adversity that he faced, would de-thread his hospital clothing, for example, and then embroider onto the hospital sheets. So most of his works are blue thread embroidered onto these big white sheets. Doing this because he heard voices that informed him that he was on this divine mission to make a registry of the world, to be presented to God for judgment day, because according to this mythology, God wouldn't know what it was like on earth. And it was Arthur Bispo's job to tell him. And so the story itself is a registry of the things that Bispo sees, from the very mundane buttons that he finds on the street to, you know, more sublime concepts like female beauty, for instance. He has some works about that. And this just seemed to me then, and then increasingly so as time has gone on, as this just wonderful expression of what the creative process is like for many of us. You know, it's an attempt to somehow capture this world that we're going through and put it on paper and retain it somehow during this very fleeting time.
One story I'd like to finish up with, the line agent Pascal, for a couple of reasons, not least of which is Pascal, he's a telegraph operator stationed in a remote part of the Amazon, and he develops an intimate knowledge of his distant colleagues. So we can be as socially distant, as physically distant as we like in Pascal's world, but yet we can still have that. We can still have intimacy of some kind. You really are. You probably wrote this long before isolation and self-isolation and COVID-19 was anywhere near you. Do you think that Pascal maybe is a good role model for us in terms of being intimate at a distance?
Maybe. I hope so. I think one of the most difficult thing for a human being to do is to be alone in a room. That's why I call him Pascal. It's sort of a riff on Blaise Pascal's famous line about the most difficulty for man being alone in a room. And yet he forms these relationships. And you know, he puzzled me. People like him puzzled me, because there were people like him who could live in such total isolation and yet build from the, in his case, just the sort of tapping of the telegraph key, build these relationships, these fights, tensions, fantasies, about the people really rich internal life or shared life with people that they weren't in contact with. And so he's an imagining like that. But of all the stories, I think he is one of the ones that I think about, probably the one I think about the most during these periods of time, because, you know, it's quite hard to be isolated and to not know when one is going to return to one's friends, one's family, sort of the common human experience. And then just to think about the other ways of being a person in a social world during this time is, I think, a challenge that everybody's facing.
Yeah, but I suppose you probably, and you can't say you'll send us directly to your books, but you possibly would. But I think for you, reading is one of the greatest ways of maintaining mental health. And I suppose in these times when we are alone, reading is not a bad way to have lots of people with you.
No, I think that reading, I mean, there are studies that show that reading is associated with various positive mental health outcomes. I think on a personal, sort of anecdotal level, that I notice a marked difference in my mood over the course of the day. If I'm reading something good at that time, it's like I know that that evening, when it's quiet again, I'll be able to return to this rich imaginative world. And there's something about not being given images that allows us to create. And there's something about, I think, that creative process that occurs while reading that prompts a sort of engagement with, you know, with the text and its characters, but also something as fundamental as language that can make, you know, even being in a little room, as hard as it is, a richer experience.
Well, thanks for speaking to us about your book this evening. In fact, which has some images throughout it, but we leave that to the reader to find out as he or she goes through those beautiful little drawings, which kind of link in with the scientific theme, I think, in some ways. That's Daniel Mason there speaking to me about his collection of short stories, A Registry of My Passage Upon the Earth. It's published by Mantle.